Deborah Manning has agreed to come and tell us about a few more projects that are happening in Minnesota that require sort of some creative planning to make work. And a lot of these projects need just as much in the planning phase as the construction phase. And so I think it's important to take that into perspective when we're considering projects such as these. Deborah Manning is a principal engineer with the Metropolitan Council's Environmental Services with a Bachelor's of Science and a Master's of Science in Civil and Environmental Engineering from Virginia Tech. Throughout her career, Ms. Manning has worked with water and wastewater utilities to meet upcoming regulatory system expansion and level of service requirements. She is a proud member of the Select Society of Sanitary Sludge Shovelers. So please welcome Deborah Manning.
Thank you, and thank you for sticking around for my talk. It's a little hard to see from here everything, so I'm going to refer to some slide printout here and see if I can move this forward. Yeah. Metropolitan Council Environmental Services serves the seven county Twin Cities metro area, about 3,000 square miles. We treat 250 million gallons a day of wastewater on average at 8 wastewater treatment plants. The figure there shows the service areas for each of the 8 plants. The largest is the metro plant. That's service area shown in green, and then the rest of the plants in blue and other colors. We have 600 miles of interceptor pipe that bring the wastewater from about the 108 communities that we serve, and we serve about 2+ million wastewater customers. In the United States, we produce about 32 billion gallons of municipal wastewater per day. And about 7 to 8% of that is reclaimed for reuse. And that amounts to about 2,500 million gallons a day. Typical drivers for that, we've heard a lot of this today, are to conserve potable water or avoid new water source development, mitigate saltwater intrusion, heard a lot about that, land subsidence, et cetera, and also to support or augment wetlands or other surface water features. Currently, about 90% of wastewater reuse occurs in California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, states that are either pretty dry and also have a lot of agricultural production. But we see reuse steadily increasing across North America, not just in those areas. I'm going to skip this because we've heard from the city of Mankato and others. The drivers that we see at MCES and our progress to date are what I want to focus on. Our drivers for wastewater reuse include alleviating interceptor capacity constraints. And that means in our system, we have, as I mentioned, these pipes that bring wastewater to our treatment plants. And some of them were built long ago, but are serving increasingly large service areas. So some of them we expect over the years will have some capacity constraints that we would need to enlarge those pipes. Our thinking is that if we could site wastewater reclamation facilities upstream of where those constraints are, offload the wastewater flow, and reuse the reclaimed water, that we could avoid some of those projects of needing to increase those pipes. And they get to be pretty expensive and disruptive projects. So that's one of the drivers that we can foresee. Also conserving and supplementing groundwater and surface water, and helping to meet receiving water waste load allocations. This one's probably pretty far in the future, but as we look at increasing growth in the Twin Cities area, we don't anticipate that our effluent loading will increase. That's only decreasing over time, and wastewater reuse may help us in that regard by helping us offload some of that load. Our progress to date, includes, back in 2007, we did an industrial reuse study funded by the LCCMR, and that was actually for the whole state. The LCCMR had us look at how much industrial potable water use there was in the state and how that matched up with wastewater flows and what it would take to substitute reclaim water and use it as a process water for industries. We've also built the East Bethel Water Reclamation Facility, and that's been in operation since July of 2014, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. We're also doing, as Ole mentioned, these ongoing studies, which are more in the planning. Reuse is really site-specific, case-specific, so we've been looking on a sub-regional basis on what wastewater reuse might look like in different parts of the metro area. We feel that we need to lead by example, so we have been focusing on our wastewater treatment plants and how we can implement wastewater reuse, but also water conservation in addition to what we already do. And finally, we've been and are approached by the communities that we serve to do joint studies on what reuse might look like. And one in particular that I'll talk more about is with the city of Eagan. So first I want to talk about the East Bethel Water Reclamation Facility in East Bethel. Oh, there it is, it's on the wall. The facility is that red box there. And we currently treat to a high level of discharge. We send the highly treated wastewater to two sites where we land apply it in some land application or rapid infiltration basins. That's what we currently do. So we're basically recharging surficial groundwater. In the future, we hope that we're using that water for irrigating golf courses or for other uses. So that's where we hope we'll head. This is a schematic that I think helps describe what we're currently doing. This is a schematic for the East rapid infiltration basin. So year round, we're applying the reclaimed water to those two rapid infiltration basins. The water infiltrates again into this surficial sand aquifer. And so we're recharging that area. It does not go into the potable drinking water aquifer in the area. That was as we were designing and building this facility, planning the facility, a lot of conversations with local landowners who had wells that we were not recharging here, we were recharging in this area. In terms of performance, well, let me first say the initial construction capacity is 0.41 million gallons a day for the East Bethel plant. And we're currently operating at about a fourth of that. So as the area develops, we'll be able to treat more wastewater. Our process there is mostly membrane bioreactors with UV disinfection. The parameters shown are what are the parameters that are in our SDS permit, so CBOD5, total suspended solids, total nitrogen, total phosphorus, and a disinfection requirement. Our permit requirements are shown in that second column. What we do, though, is treat to an effluent target that's shown in the third column, and those are significantly below the SDS permit requirements. Our operational data for 2015 are shown in the last column. And we've been operating even below our effluent target for the most part. So we're below 2 milligrams per liter on CBOD5, below 1 for TSS, about 4.8 milligrams per liter for total nitrogen, 0.1 milligram per liter for phosphorus, and our disinfection is less than 1 total coliform per 100 ml. Moving on to that initiative that I said where we feel we need to, well, not just feel, our goal and policy is to lead by example. We're looking to increase our wastewater reuse within our wastewater treatment plants. And currently we do reuse our effluent at the Metro plant. We use about 6 million gallons a day on the air quality scrubbers in our incineration process. At our Seneca wastewater treatment plant, there's an after cooler in the incinerator process that we use 2 million gallons a day of effluent for. At Eagles Point, which is in Washington County, we recover heat from our effluent. And in a number of our wastewater treatment plants, we use our treated effluent for yard hydrants and tank cleaning and that sort of use. What we've been focusing on, starting with the Metro plant, is to shift some of this tank flushing, cleanup, seal water, and some pumps from city water and service water, which is groundwater, to our plant effluent. And we foresee a reduction in city water or groundwater use of about 1.7 million gallons a day on average. By implementing these reductions, we need to increase our disinfection in order to use that water. So we're in the process of designing that facility and getting that up to speed. So as we are looking at our implant use, we again started at Metro. That's our largest plant, our largest service area. And we are plan to move to other of our treatment plants in the future. We've also been doing these sub-regional wastewater reuse scenarios. So this would be reuse off of our treatment plant site. And the purpose is just really to say, given potential users of reclaimed water in a particular area, what could we foresee matching up those users with our effluent treated to a higher level? And develop that sort of concept, and then take that and communicate, talk with communities and watershed districts, whoever, and say, okay, how does this match up with how you're picturing water management in this area? So it's not an implementation plan. It's not a preliminary engineering study. It's really something to get the conversation started and to take to a wider audience. And we recognize that in order to do this, there's significant collaboration and consultation needed. MCES provides wastewater treatment. We aren't the water supplier in the metropolitan area. So we're not the stormwater treatment people. So we know that in order to implement any of this, we really need to have this broader consultation and collaboration. So we've looked at a few sub-regions, the Southeast Metro, Northeast Metro, and again, the city of Eagan requested that we do a joint feasibility study. I'm going to focus on the Southeast Metro scenario as both an example and just to communicate and using this slide. The Southeast Metro area is served by our Empire Wastewater Treatment Plant. That's shown right about there. And the dark pink area and light pink area are what is the service area for that treatment plant. The dark pink is the service area anticipated through 2040. That's our planning horizon there. The light pink is what we call our ultimate service area, so what we can anticipate beyond 2040. And we looked in this area and said, well, who are current user, groundwater users or, and potential existing and potential users. And there's, clearly the Flint Hills Refinery is a large large groundwater user in that area. But there's also some areas that are anticipating growth between 2010 and 2040, and residential and commercial. And we thought perhaps those are areas where reclaimed water could be used for toilet flushing and also for irrigation. And then there's large areas of agricultural fields, and that those potentially could use reclaimed water for irrigation as well. I want to point out that the outfall, or the pipe from the Empire plant, travels here north and then east to the Mississippi River. So we've already got this outfall pipe taking our effluent, our treated wastewater from the Empire plant through this area. And so in the past, we've had conversations with the Flint Hills Pine Bend Refinery about potentially using reclaimed water for cooling water. And we have also heard from communities that they would like to know if there's a way to offset having to expand water supply in areas of growth. That's why we were looking at the residential and commercial toilet flushing and irrigation. We did only look at areas of growth between 2010 and 2040 because it's just cost prohibitive to try to retrofit areas for reclaimed water distribution piping. So we selected areas of growth. And so those were the potential users that we considered. In order to serve them, we would need to increase our treatment at the Empire Wastewater Treatment Plant. So we would need additional treatment and storage, and that would serve the residential and commercial toilet flushing and agricultural irrigation. And also, we, in order to serve Flint Hills water for cooling water, we would anticipate needing a satellite membrane filtration reverse osmosis plant, kind of taking wastewater from our outfall and treating it to a higher level than you need for irrigation for the most part. So that was basically what formed the framework for our scenario of what reuse might look like, what wastewater reuse might look like in that area. One of the reasons that we did this is to say, well, how much demand is there and how much demand could we meet with the reclaimed water, and then what would it cost? So, and what's driving those costs? So that was one of the reasons we wanted to put this scenario together. We assumed a reuse demand of 10 million gallons a day on an average day basis and a 21 million gallons a day peak. So that's what we said, okay, if we were meeting these water uses, that would be the demand. The Empire Wastewater Treatment Plant currently has an average flow of 10 million gallons a day. It's designed for 24 million gallons a day. That's its capacity. So we know we could meet that demand. The reuse incremental costs that we came up with, given our current level of treatment, what we would have to do, what additional treatment we would have to do in order to meet these uses, came out to about $5 to $10 per 1,000 gallons. So that's an incremental cost. So that's the cost above what we already incur in order to treat our wastewater. I'm comparing that with the Twin Cities water rates of $1 to $5 per 1,000 gallons. And the $5 to $10 range, the $5 is obviously the treating to the lower level that you would need for irrigation. The $10 upper limit there is the additional treatment that you would need for things like cooling water. There's also a significant amount of distribution system cost in there. So that is not by no. The distribution system cost is a significant cost in addition to treatment. The cost drivers are the reducing the salts and nitrate concentration. We assumed that we would need to meet drinking water standards for nitrates. We don't want to contribute to nitrate contamination. And the reduction of salts is needed if we're going to be doing irrigation and certainly for cooling water. So I want to move on to the Egan reuse feasibility study. The city of Egan came to us and said that they would like to do a reuse feasibility study with us. And they, our Seneca wastewater treatment plant is basically in their backyard. This is the Minnesota River. And they have large corporate campus in this part of Egan. This is Highway 13, Yankee Doodle Road, if I've got that right. So I'm mentioning this is a Seneca plant, 13 Yankee Doodle Road, large corporate campuses. In fact, the corporate irrigation, seasonal irrigation, is their second highest water use after the city's water demand for potable drinking water. So so they were looking at how can they, is there a way for them to reduce their water demand, but also that seasonal use? And is there some opportunity to do some reuse for water, wastewater available at our treatment plant? When we looked at reusing the effluent and the treatment level that would be needed, it was just very expensive. We would need to do a significant chloride and reduction and other treatment that we just thought was going to drive the cost too high. But at the Seneca plant, we have an underdrain dewatering system in order to dewater surficial groundwater and keep our tanks basically in the ground. So we dewater quite a bit of water, about 1 to 2 million gallons a day. And we take that water and put it into our outfall pipe. So we talked about, that's good quality water. Could that be used for irrigation purposes? So we started down that direction of using that underdrain dewatering water, not putting it in our outfall pipe and out to the river, but using it for that irrigation, taking it from the plant and using it for irrigation in that corporate campus area. In the future, Egan would like to consider using that water and potentially the reclaimed water from the Seneca plant throughout their city. But we're starting right now with a preliminary estimated demand of about 500,000 gallons a day and using that underdrain dewatering water. So we've just completed our first step there of this first phase of a feasibility study. We worked through a number of ideas and cost estimating and are just about to wrap up that report and be able to have that distributed more widely. So overall, I want to focus on a few things that we're finding. Those are examples of what we're doing in terms of reuse, but we're finding some things that we think apply generally across the board. And the first is that, and this is kind of a no-brainer, that our effluent quality drives reuse treatment costs. So matching up our effluent quality with what the user's quality needs are is what drives a lot of the treatment costs. And I mentioned the reducing the chlorides as one cost driver. Chlorides are a component of total dissolved solids. And what I wanted to present here is some data that we've been gathering about our total dissolved solids concentration in our treatment plant effluent. Our current permits don't require that we monitor for total dissolved solids. So we have implemented, and it's been going on for about 8 months or so, a water quality sampling program for all our wastewater treatment plants, looking at parameters that are of interest for wastewater reuse, and total dissolved solids is one of those parameters. At our Metro plant, the TDS concentration that we're finding averages about 797 milligrams per liter. Just want to compare that with our East Bethel plant, as I mentioned, which receives a higher level of treatment there, about at 654 milligrams per liter. Our other wastewater treatment plants, the average is 1236. The range can go from about 688 to 2176, so there's a pretty large range there for total dissolved solids. We are going to continue to dig into this, but our belief is that our TDS concentration, in particular our chlorides, the source of that is really home water softeners, and so it varies. If the water supplier in an area does central softening, our TDS concentration is lower. Then if the water suppliers don't do central softening, and it's more home water softeners, then the TDS is higher. In comparison, though, with impact on irrigation, if your TDS is in a range, and this information is from the 2012 guidelines for water reuse from the EPA. If your TDS is less than 450 milligrams per liter, there's kind of the sense that there's no impact on irrigation. If you're in the 450 to 2,000 range, there's a slight to moderate impact, and there's a severe impact if you're above 2,000. So we're looking at this thinking we're somewhere in this slight to moderate range, and so and it depends on what you're growing and soils and that sort of thing. Want to study that further. We also want to look at, is there a way to do any source reduction for chlorides and other components of TDS, and see if there's a way to do that. And then are there ways that we can avoid, if we're looking at doing wastewater reuse, avoid having to go to reverse osmosis to reduce that TDS level. It's just very expensive, and you produce this reject water that you really, in this area, we really don't have any way to dispose of that. So it's right now one of the larger issues that we think we're facing with wastewater reuse. Probably also goes without saying, but location of potential users and uses, it drives the distribution system costs. There's few large potential users in the metropolitan area. I mentioned the Flint Hills Pine Bend Refinery. That's, you know, a large groundwater user in a location very close to one of our treatment plants. But there just aren't a lot of other large industrial or other potential users. There's also a limited number of large contiguous future development areas. And where there are, they tend to be far from our wastewater treatment plants because that's the way the region has grown. So we wind up having high distribution system costs for the reclaimed water distribution system. Those costs may offset new or capacity increase projects for interceptors. So that, again, could be a driver. But it has got us thinking about this concept of satellite water reclamation facilities. And I also want to mention we are trying to see what are year-round potential uses. Irrigation is a typical reclaimed water use, but it doesn't really, from our perspective, that doesn't... that's not the strongest driver because we still have to have the wastewater treatment plant for the rest of the year. We're trying to look at other uses, year-round uses, not just irrigation. And finally, one of the reasons we're looking to do this scenario is to compare it with other water management alternatives. And I mentioned the Twin Cities water rates being in that $1 to $5 per thousand gallon, and our estimate of the incremental cost for wastewater reuse being in the $5 to $10 per thousand gallons. Normally, this would be kind of the end of the discussion, but we do see communities moving to wanting to look at integrated water costs and doing cost-benefit analysis, and think that that's a direction that we need to go in terms of integrated water planning and management in the area, where communities are interested in that. So we are looking to be part of the discussion, such as, you know, I mentioned the city of Eagan coming to us on what's the cost of new water sources, what's the cost benefit of reuse, say, for groundwater recharge or other water sustainability benefits, and how can we do some cost benefit analysis where we have comparable costs and some methods that we feel generate some values that are comparative. So our next steps, especially with these uses beyond our wastewater treatment plant sites, are collaboration to do these water feasibility studies where communities are interested in that, and to look at total dissolved solids reduction. I mentioned we are looking at, you know, we're kind of in this mid-range, so how do we define that better, and then what can be done about source reduction, and again, the comparison among water management alternatives. So our outreach is to local communities and our wastewater customers, to regulatory agencies, and to other potential users and partners. That concludes my presentation, and I'd open it up for any questions.
Say the current supply is adequate, but Mississippi River during the drought periods dropped to very low levels. And when you look at your supply, what are you using for what's adequate?
We're using the current the current water use data, and we know that there are, say, the Mississippi River users, such as St. Paul, have groundwater as well. So we're looking at that current use. In the future, we know that the projections are such that groundwater aquifer, we're projecting some aquifer decline, and that in the future there be continued interest in alternative sources of water. So what I was trying to stick with was current water use and be able to compare that with our current treatment capacity and current treatment costs. Does that answer your question? Okay, how can I?
Are you taking into consideration that low the river is going to get, and the fact that the demands on it are much greater than it was in the 30s.
We actually, one of the reasons why, yes, we are. One of the reasons why we are looking at wastewater reuse is to prepare not only for future growth, but also for potential drought and being prepared for those situations. So drought is one of the reasons why we think wastewater reuse may be of more interest, and we need to be prepared for that.
I'm not sure if this is a question as much as a statement, but it sure seems like a chloride limit on your wastewater effluent may also then help your efforts for water reuse. And I don't know that anybody would predict where chloride limits might end up, but I hear rumblings that there might be chloride effluent limits at some point.
Yeah, and another kind of part of our situation is we anticipate future regulations such as chloride, such as nitrogen. And we just believe that if we're going to be treating to lower and lower levels, continuing to discharge that water to rivers just doesn't make sense. So if we're investing money in that level of treatment, there isn't a lot more investment to go ahead and reuse that wastewater.